Tappers, hello. What's up? It is the Daily Tap. It is Wednesday, February 6th. Took a second there. Hope you guys are all doing well. We are inching closer to the NBA trade deadline. We are inching closer to Marquette Villanova. Marquette did play St. John's tonight, and that Tuesday night, and that is where we'll start. And it unfortunately was not a good night for Marquette. They lose, come up short, 70-69. Shamori Ponds hit a game-winning layup with about, 10 seconds left or so. Ponds hits the layup, beats, it was a little more than that. It was like more like 20 seconds. But he beats Marquette, 70-69. Marquette falls for the first time since January 2nd when St. John's did beat them again. The Golden Eagles, obviously, they've only lost twice since November 21st. And the one team that has beat them is St. John's. They obviously have their number. This isn't a game that I'm going to be ranting and raving about. I think last year, Marquette lost at St. John's in a pathetic loss. And I remember getting on this podcast and just fucking laying into Marquette. I remember it well. I'd have to dig through it. It was either in January or February of last year. And it's clear that St. John's is kind of Marquette's daddy at this point. I think they're a team with scary-ass length, and unfortunately Marquette doesn't have the length to compete at that level, especially on the wings. But also, you know, there obviously is a good game plan against them. And what was unfortunate was Steve Wojnarowski unlocked it, the ingredients, like with 14 minutes left. It's like a guy who is at Legends of the Hidden Temple, and he just started getting going a little too late, and he ran out of time. Joseph Chartouni leading the point was really successful against this St. John's team. Why? Not really sure. Chartouni a little slower, not the most athletic person. I would not imagine him being very successful against St. John's, but he was. Chartouni looked great against St. John's in this one, and Ed Morrow also was really good off the bench. So he had kind of, those two guys played a large role in bringing this team back. Sam Hauser with a double-double. I think it was a little too late, and Marquette got down early. I think if they don't start off so slow and they sort of punch St. John's back in the mouth, this is an entirely different ballgame. Remember, St. John's started the second half on a 9-4 run. They busted that lead out to 15, and it kind of looked like Marquette had laid an egg. But this Marquette team, man, does not quit. They do not go away. They don't just sort of lay down. We've seen teams in the past under Wojciechowski just sort of give up and lose by anywhere from 15 to 25 because they just decide they don't want to play defense. This Marquette team thought they could win this game all the way through, and they nearly did. There were just a few key moments. Sakar Anum not letting Shamori Ponds land. I still think it was kind of a hasty call to make. We never got a replay. I mean, the fact of the matter is that Ponds gets such a whistle by Big East officials. It's crazy. And so I think if Marquette were to play St. John's again in the Big East tournament, I think you'd have to figure out a way to free up Marcus Howard. Marcus Howard has been so good against other teams, and his stats against St. John's are woeful. He only averages 11 points a game against St. John's. That is obviously his lowest from a multiple team game log perspective. So, you know, I think this isn't a game, though, to like go crazy about. Marquette might lose, I don't know, they're definitely not going to be a 2 seed anymore, but they'll still be a 3 somewhere and a 4 in other places, maybe even lower as a 5. Listen, like, that type of shit, while it's fun to look at, it's fun to get excited about, look at potential matchups, yada yada, it really doesn't mean shit until the end of February. Then at the end of February, we can at least start having weekly conversations about where we think Marquette's going to land up. But right now, there is so much basketball to play, and it's an unpredictable year. I mean, Duke is the stalwart. Tennessee has been amazing, but a team like Kentucky, who just keeps winning and keeps winning by a lot, is very interesting. Michigan State, who looked to me, looked like the best team in the country at certain points in the last month and a half or whatever, they lose three straight, including a loss at home to Indiana. Then they went on the road on Tuesday and lose to Illinois. So basically, that's my long way of saying, like, I'm not going to get too worked up about the rankings. I'm not going to get too worked up about the seeding. I'm just going to see where it lands for Marquette. And if they can beat Villanova on Saturday for National Marquette Day, it kind of null and voids the loss to St. John's. St. John's is a near top 25 team. It's not like they lost to some scrub. I mean, that is far from the truth. I think, and it, you know, I was kind of, I got a little more concerned about this game, and I probably should have stayed away from a betting perspective or just bet the under when St. John's got blown out by Duke. I think that was a telltale sign to me, like, oh, fuck. So they didn't really play like a full game against Duke. They didn't really, you know, exert a ton of energy. So it really was more of a rest for them instead of this hard-fought, hard-nosed game that went down to the wire with one of the best teams in the country. If that was the case, I actually think tired legs would have played a factor in this one. But Marquette got cold. The other part of this that I want people to consider regarding Marquette is, like, probably the worst thing that happened to them was that they got 6 days off. Like, they were a team who just, I think, wanted to keep playing basketball because they were running so goddamn hot. And you ask yourself, if this game was Saturday, would it have been any different with Marquette and St. John's? I don't know. And, you know, some teams on the opposite will get cold and they're like, we need this time off to sort of refigure ourselves out. I think Marquette might have got a little too, I wouldn't say big for their britches, but I think they knew Villanova was coming up. They were preparing for Villanova, but they're also playing for St. John's. They got kind of out of their routine. Also, like, this is very tertiary. Taking consideration, these guys didn't have school for a couple days last week. I just think there were a lot of elements that kind of set yourself up for a loss today. So not a big deal. I didn't expect them to beat Butler last week. They blew out Butler. They lose to St. John's here. I'll call that a horse apiece. Villanova will be tough. We'll talk about it on the watch list. Maybe mention a little bit Tabbing the Keg tomorrow with Mitchie. But yeah, Villanova will be a great fucking game. I'm definitely looking forward to that and very excited for that one. All right, moving to baseball. So yes, baseball gets the second billing on the podcast. So there is a new proposal out. Ken Rosenthal of The Athletic wrote this about the new proposal on the table for MLB to initiate a 26th member on the team. So that's kind of a light one. But the big one, the big headliners are they want to add a limit of 3 batters per pitcher, and they also want to have a DH in the National League. So before we talk about the impact that this would have on your Milwaukee Brewers, let's just talk about the rules themselves. So I love the three batter rule. I absolutely adore that rule. For me, one of the more frustrating things to watch as a baseball fan are the matchup baseball that goes on in the 6th through 8th inning that take 30 or 40 fucking minutes, especially on a West Coast game, especially on one where maybe I don't have the time or the patience for it. It's just really redundant. And I understand that it's part of the strategy and everything like that. My rule was, I actually said this, I think, in October when Dave Roberts would do this incessantly, is to at least make, you know, you're only allowed 2 pitching changes per inning. And I thought that made a lot of sense because that way then you'd guarantee not a third. I could see, you know, one pitcher goes in for a batter and then a next one, but then that next one has to finish the inning. No questions asked. Now, if they get shelled or whatever happens, well, that happens. You burn that guy and that you've made your decision. So this 3 batter rule is interesting and I think it could work. I don't think it's a direct shot at the whole starter or the whole opener philosophy. I do think it's kind of a Wade Miley rule after what he did in the NLCS where Miley pitched to one batter and then Brandon Woodruff came in. I think there is a little bit of a subtle nod to that. But I don't necessarily think this is to inhibit the starter, because most times those starters, or the openers, I should say, sorry, pitch at least an inning before they get pulled. So this guarantees that the first inning will be without a pitching change, and then anything on, you know, three batters can be a lot too for a pitcher. I mean, it would make it a lot challenging for managers, because there are some pitchers who, you know, right after two batters, they don't have it, whether it's back-to-back doubles or a home run and a triple or whatever, that they just have a full understanding that this guy is not in his bag tonight and it's not going to work. As for the DH, man, I'm going to sound like an old guy here, but that just rubs me the wrong way. I've grown up with NL baseball. The Brewers were in the American League until I was, I think, 8 or 7. And, you know, I don't really remember that much of AL baseball. Mostly my memories are of the NL and watching pitchers bat and that aspect of it. So to see the and double switches and pinch hitters and all that jazz, to see the DH come in would be a massive bummer. It really would be, because that just takes away something that you've been used to. And I think that's where a lot of people stand. I think that's where baseball's purists stand. I think that's where a lot of people my age probably sit. But the Gen Z, the millennials who may not be fully into baseball, they want offense. They want, you know, a bunch of scoring. They don't want pitcher's duels. So adding a DH gives you another opportunity. And for the Brewers' sake, the DH would really help. I mean, they had all those issues with the outfield. You'd get probably more Eric Thames at first and DH. You'd have Jesus Aguilar likely DHing, Ryan Braun. Probably be a steady rotation of Braun, Aguilar, and Thames from a DH perspective. So they have the guys to DH. Their DH would not be some random guy off the street or your Cody Spangenberg, right? It would be legit power hitters at that DH position, which is great for the Brewers. The three batter limit, I don't think really affects the Brewers. I know that they do some matchup baseball, but really besides the opener stuff, they're not really about sort of the every other guy or something like that. I mean, every now and again, Council will play the matchup, but usually the guy he sends in is pitching at least two or three batters, two maybe at most. So to add that third one is a definite element, but you know, they're going to find ways around this. You do understand that baseball have some of the smartest minds in their front office, and their analytics teams are already working on ways to make this better, how to solve this if this is a real problem for said team. That's just kind of how they work, man. That's how they get it together. All right, wrapping up the show with a couple deadline nuggets. So the NBA trade deadline is Friday, the 8th. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to do the weekend watch list, and then we will have a deadline special, maybe a daily tap, and that kind of be, I don't know if we would have a free talk weekend then, but something that I could get on Friday night. I believe that I have no issues with getting on Friday night and talking through exactly what happened in the deadline, if anything happens. You never know. Sometimes deadlines are super quiet. So, you know, the one news that's sort of out there right now is the idea that Mike Connolly, the latest rumors are revolving around Memphis's big two. So Mark Gasol, their Shams reported that there is a strong inclination to get Mark Gasol to Charlotte. The deal that's been kind of around on the internet works out to something like Malik Monk, a first, and maybe taking Bismack Biyombo's big ass contract. That seems to be the structure of the deal. It'd be great for Memphis to get back Malik Monk. I think Malik Monk would be a guy that you can definitely start building that future around with Jaren Jackson, and that would be a great addition. I don't think that's a bad trade at all. And weirdly enough, if Charlotte does get Marc Gasol, that actually helps the Bucks a lot. Charlotte is not a great matchup for Milwaukee, partly because they play small, they play fast, and they're a little pesky. If you add Marc Gasol to that mix, they got to play a little bigger, And that would also, we've seen what Brooke Lopez and Giannis, for that matter, have done against Marc Gasol this year. They've been really successful against him. So if the Bucks and Hornets were to meet, that would actually be a very good look for them. But the Hornets are obviously seeing an opportunity to make a push into the playoffs further, like the sixth seed, the fifth seed. You know, that's not out of the question. They would obviously have some work to do, but it's not out of the question with Brooklyn being unpredictable as well as Indiana faltering with the loss of Victor Oladipo, although they did wax the Lakers by 40 tonight. Who bet on the Lakers? You bet I did. All right. The other Memphis guy, Mike Conley, not as much substantial news. There's a lot of rumors and bullshit out there. There's some Detroit smoke. There's some Utah smoke. There is the smoke of all smokes. I was going to name a girl, you know, like Smoke Show, but that would have been not funny. The smoke of all smokes is the fact that Toronto is putting on the table Jonas Valanciunas and Kyle Lowry for both Marc Gasol and Mike Conley. Now, is Toronto going to come through with the Mike Conley deal, and which actually wouldn't be that dumb of them? Because, okay, if they know that they're not going to re-sign Kawhi, right? They just have this idea that we're not going to get Kawhi Leonard next year, and he's going to go somewhere else. So we bring in Mike Conley, who's a max guy, who can be a leader of this team going forward. Great defender, great scorer. I mean, Leonard and Conley on the perimeter would be fucking terrifying for people. And I'm very praying that it does not happen. Now, the other part of this is, so if Leonard goes and they still have Conley, you can get a guy like Tobias Harris, Chris Middleton, someone kind of in that second banana that would fit in with Conley. I think that's what you would be looking for. Now, there also is buzz they may go to Utah. I'm not sure what the deal would be. Would it be Ricky Rubio? I guess that would probably be somebody involved with the deal. But really, is Ricky Rubio a guy you want to build your future on? They're not going to give you Donovan Mitchell for him. There's no way. So what is that package, I guess, that Utah has to offer him from a youthful exuberance perspective? They don't really have that one young guy you can say, yeah, that's a guy I'd rebuild. I think the Charlotte deal is one that they might try to seek out for Conley as well. Toronto also has young guys that, you know, would be, I don't think they would trade. I don't think Pascal Siakam's off the table. I think you'd really have to try hard to get Siakam. Valanciunas is a nice piece. I think he's kind of more of a nice to have. I would say if I were them, I would put it to OG Anunoby. I think that's your guy. I think that is the guy who you can at least say, all right, another young talent, a little more unpredictable than Malik Monk, but still he has that ability to maybe flourish as a starter. So we'll see what happens. This can change tomorrow. Mitch and I will kind of do a deadline prep, but we are going to first draft the all-star teams. Mitch will be team Giannis. I will be team LeBron. We will flip a coin to see who goes first, and it will be off from there. So we'll do that. We'll also talk about the deadline, of course, and probably put a bow on the NFL season, look ahead to the off season. All right. Take care, guys. We'll be back Friday for the weekend watch list, and have a great Wednesday. Later.